Wing TV, with Victor Thorne and Lisa Giuliani. The revolution is being televised.
Hello, it's Monday, March 14th, and you're watching Wing TV. This is day 6 of 9/11 on trial, and I'm Lisa Giuliani.
And I'm Victor Thorne. Welcome to Wing TV. To start things off, we have to extend a big thank you to last Friday's witness, Mr. Michael Waldeer. Wasn't he phenomenal?
He was magnificent.
Yeah, there was a buzz here at Wing TV when he was done testifying. And that's what we were talking about last Monday in our introduction. That we said we didn't know what to expect with this trial. So we're basically going into uncharted territory. We're taking risks and we're going beyond ourselves. We're doing things we've never done before. And if we want to make any progress in this movement and get the truth out, that's what all of us have to do. We have to go beyond ourselves into areas that we've never explored before.
And take a risk.
Right, right.
And we'd like to wish Michael Langston a happy birthday today and also say hello and a special thank you to our friends John and Andre from the Jetta Project in the UK. They're coming up with some awesome music tracks for us, and we really appreciate it.
Now, today's witness is Mr. Aaron Smoot. He's going to talk about the impact of the jetliners upon the World Trade Center towers on the morning of 9/11.
So, without any further ado, we'd like to join the proceedings with Judge Alan Kirkpatrick.
Please be seated. Court is now in session. Today, we will continue with the people's case against the United States federal government in regards to the events of September 11th, 2001 at the World Trade Center Towers in New York City. Let us proceed. Witness, do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you, Your Honor. Witness number 4, please state your name for the record.
Aaron Smoot.
Today's testimony revolves around impact on 9/11 at the World Trade Center towers. Now that we know the government's official version of events, as well as how the towers were constructed, the next logical step is to briefly examine what happened upon impact when each plane struck the World Trade Center towers. Mr. Smoot, as we have already determined, a Boeing 767 is quite similar to a Boeing 707, which the towers were designed to withstand impact from. In terms of maximum damage infliction, was a Boeing 767 the optimal choice of aircraft?
No, it wasn't.
If the supposed hijackers had wanted to ensure the maximum amount of damage, what type of airplane would they have selected?
Probably a Boeing 747.
Why is that, sir?
Because the Boeing 747s weigh more than twice as much, and they can carry more than twice the fuel, and they travel a little faster than the 767. So the 747s would have caused much more death and destruction than 767s.
Very well. Now, briefly describe the types of hits each tower took on the morning of 9/11.
Well, the North Tower took a direct hit perpendicular to the core, excuse me, while the South Tower took more of an angular hit, almost parallel to the core structure.
I ask the jurors to please keep this vital information in mind, for it will be crucial in our upcoming testimony. In the meantime, since the second tower, the South Tower, was hit at such an extreme angle, what happened to the fuel it was carrying?
Flight 175's bad approach angle meant that the jet fuel burst out of the building and exploded outside.
This was the huge fireball we all saw on television?
Yes.
And since a good portion of the fuel burned outside the building, where does it imply that it didn't go?
This implies that a good deal of it didn't go inside the South Tower.
Now, in regard to the steel columns and massive core, which we questioned a previous witness about, what effect did the impact have on these towers?
Thomas Eagar, who was featured in Nova's How the Towers Fell documentary as a supporter of the government's claims, admitted that the impact of the airplanes would have been insignificant because the number of columns lost in the initial impact was not large and the loads were shifted to remaining columns in the highly redundant structure. Likewise, Eric Humpschmidt, author of Painful Questions, added, within a few dozen seconds after the plane crashed, the North Tower was quiet, stable, and motionless.
Very good, sir. Would the crashing planes have had much effect on the central core?
The steel beams bearing most of the load were located near the center of the tower, and thus most of the metal from the plane would not have hit the central steel beams, which then would have remained largely undamaged by the impact.
A previous witness, Leslie Robertson, who was the World Trade Center's structural engineer, compared the plane's impact to a pencil piercing a mosquito net. Is this an accurate assessment, Mr. Smoot?
It is. The speed of the projectile determines whether the impact damage is localized or spread across a large area. The faster the projectile, the more localized the damage.
Please give us an example of this.
An example would be like driving a nail through a piece of wood or firing a bullet into a fence post. Both are done at such speed that they only do local damage.
So what happens to the material that is not in direct proximity to the high-speed projectile?
In both examples, the wood just a centimeter or two from the impact point is essentially just undamaged.
Would this notion also apply to the World Trade Center?
Yeah, the aircraft impacts were at great speed and the damage was localized.
Could you tell us precisely how you define localized?
Confined or restricted to a particular locality, fixed in one area or part.
And what is the source of this definition?
www.dictionary.com.
Thank you. To close, then, this definition would not in any way contain the word widespread, as in widespread damage?
No, it wouldn't.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Smoot, and thank you, Your Honor. No further questions.